The 3HL, coming up this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.
Let's do this Monday. Blaine and Mickey, how in the world is everybody doing? Good to have you with us. It's like 70 degrees outside. I don't even know how to feel about that right now, but I do know, Blaine, that people all over the state of Tennessee and throughout Vol Nation, wherever they may live, are looking at their computers tracking flights right now. It's flight tracking season. They make that a lot more difficult than they used to. Once upon a time, you could jump on this software called FlightAware, and you could see everybody who was going everywhere. People are a little bit more stealthy with that now, but man, airplane flights, Blaine, that's where we are. People are excited. They want to know, they want to start just putting these clues together. Everybody's a private investigator when their school is having a coaching search.
Yeah, so where is the plane at right now?
One of the last things that I saw people getting into was a stop somewhere near Atlanta, which they're rationalizing is that there was a plane, I guess, North Carolina, Charlotte, and now there's this plane is, and I'm trying to just piece all this together, but maybe that plane made a stop in Atlanta. So people are saying, well, that's where a search firm is. So, you know, maybe you got to go to Atlanta, get some business done with the search firm, but their offices are in Atlanta. That was the last rabbit hole that I went down. Feel free to tweet us at bbishop23 at Mickey Ryan for 1045. If you're one of these plane tracking people, here's what we'll do. We'll make you our plane tracking correspondent for the search. You like that, Blaine?
Like, sure.
You know, there's a guy who's fueling planes out at, you know, the airport, and he's like, oh, dude, I'm tracking this stuff. I know everything. Okay. 615-737-1045. You can just be our plane tracking correspondent throughout this, because we're trying to do the show and we got to cover some other things. But if you just got that software up and it's something you have proficiency with, be our guy or gal. We're looking for an expert in plane tracking.
Yeah. So since it was in North Carolina, we're going to hire somebody that's in the North Carolina area. What people don't realize is somebody could have flew to North Carolina and you just met them there. That was to throw people off. Or they could be in a whole nother plane. I'm sure they have more than one plane.
Yeah.
So, as you said, it's got a little more, I guess you got to be a little smarter these days to kind of with all those plane tracker people. You know, I think, Mickey, you said you had a real serious plane tracking deal that you were when you were in Arkansas. I think you need to tell everybody, you know, that story when you were a big time reporter there in Arkansas. Yeah.
Oh, this is probably what got me hired at Arkansas State, because I kept figuring out the stuff they were going to do.
Okay. They said they need to bring him on our team.
Yeah. It's like Jim Wyatt. If you keep beating everybody, they just finally brought him in house.
Okay.
So good. I kept reporting stuff. And I had a guy who worked at the Jonesboro Airport, which just think of, it would fit in one parking lot of the Nashville airport, one of the smaller parking lots, but it's the whole airport. It's one building, like, you know, pick up your bag behind gate number two. What's the door with the number two on it? Right next to the door with the number one on it. They just open the door and throw your bag out.
I have no experience in Arkansas and Arkansas State and everything. So I'm gonna go to a game where we're going to go down there. Next time you go to Arkansas, Jonesboro, just tell me and so I can get, you know, give me time. And I'm going to just come on down. I may, you know, bring the family so we can kind of have the experience that you always talk about that is so, joyous for you and your time being there and being raised there. So I want to go to all the locations that you've talked about.
I'm going to take it. The airport got hit hard by the last tornado. I think they're still trying to rebuild the one terminal building. But this was in the early days. So a guy calls me from the airport. He's like, look, man, I know you're trying to figure out who the coach is. And a lot of us thought it was going to be Gus Malzahn, and nobody in the national media believed that. There were people writing columns about it saying, this guy's not going to go to Arkansas State. That's a joke. It'll never happen. People are literally – in our business, you don't say that's never going to happen. Just because sure as you say it's never going to happen, that thing happens more often than not. You know, but some people like to be really definitive. So that's never going to happen. Well, I was convinced that it was. And I had a couple people tell me, hey, man, this is going to happen. So a guy called me that I knew that worked at the airport. And he goes, there's this software called FlightAware. You can log on to their site and you can just track planes flying from anywhere to anywhere. So I got really deep into this stuff, and this all happened pretty quickly because we were already in the coaching search. Well, one day I see a plane that's like bound from, I don't know if it was Opelika or where the actual airport sits there for Jonesboro. And we were expecting some kind of an announcement. So I'm tracking that flight. Well, it will land at this time. It left at, 12:52, and it's going to get there at 2:47 or whatever it was. So I was still doing a radio show. So I just get in my truck and I drive to the airport.
That same red truck you have now?
Yeah, same truck. Same truck. So I get in my truck. Yes, this was 2012. Same truck. I get in my truck and I drive to the airport, dude. And I know where to park because I know where the private planes land, right? Not the one commercial flight that leaves once a day and comes back later in the day that only flew at that time to El Dorado, Arkansas. That's it. It only flew to one place. And so I go to the other place where the private planes land, because we got two or three factories. Like, they make Fruity Pebbles in Jonesboro. They make Lay's potato chips. They make Lean Cuisines. They make all the stuff that you eat. Oh. An amazing amount of stuff.
Well, see, I would have just worked at one of those factories just to say I was a part of.
Well, I would work at the Fruity Pebble factory tomorrow. It smells like heaven in there.
Yes. Sugar.
Seriously, they make them, and you can drive by there, and it smells like Fruity Pebbles. So I go to the airspace where the private planes land from, like, the corporate jets, and I see this plane landing. So I run up to the fence, and at that time I probably had, that's 2012, not a flip phone, but maybe like the first iPhone that I ever had, and they took okay pictures. So, dude, this plane lands, it taxis down this tiny little runway, and there's only one way to get in or out of there. There's one way. So I positioned myself at the fence between where I knew the plane would have to park and where somebody was going to have to walk past me to get out of the one gate. And son of a gun, off the plane, Chancellor's wife, Christy Malzahn, Gus Malzahn. I start taking pictures on my cell phone. Click, 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 click. And they kind of see me and sort of semi-wave, because the chancellor knew who I was. Gus didn't know, but he's like, you got me. So I take these pictures, and, dude, I post like the picture on Twitter. That grainy, through a fence, cell phone picture went around the world. We had the guy from AL.com on with us last week, John Talty. There was another guy at that time who covered Auburn. I think it was Kevin Skarbinski. And he immediately tweeted at me, can we use this photo? And, dude, that I got a photo credit everywhere. And
that then was the birth of Mickey Ryan.
It wasn't long after that that they said, how'd you just like to work out here? I'd love to talk to you about it. So, yeah, that's what happened. But in those days, it was easy to track those flights. But it seemed like this weekend there were reports, Football Scoop said, that they were vetting P.J. Fleck and Tony Elliott, which I know there's some people who aren't excited about Tony Elliott, Blaine, and then there's some people really excited about him. It seems like nobody's really in the middle on him. And the other one was Sonny Dykes, who's the SMU coach that's been around for a minute. You know, those are some of the names that came out as being vetted by the search firm this weekend. But there are some Tennessee reporters who are saying this thing's going to go fast, 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 which they sure went fast with the AD. So at this point, I would believe go fast on the coaching search.
Yeah, I think there was also a reporter there saying that some of the, the candidates on the list that a lot of people had on the list hadn't even been contacted.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder who that was. But what I can say that kind of models, and it could be way off to the left field, even though I would prefer if it was me, a head coach, but that's why I'm not in the industry. You know who the up and coming coaches are, whether it be a special team coordinator, it could be a head coach, OC or a DC, defensive coordinator, potentially can be those guys. But whoever it is, it's going to model what Plowman, wants, and that's someone with high integrity. And so Then that leads me to Tony Elliott and someone on the Clemson staff. You know, I could see that happening, but I have no idea. I don't know very much personally about P.J. Fleck, besides he seems like a great salesman. And that doesn't resonate with me. I'm not real big on that. So that's just a personal opinion on that. It seems like he's a really good coach and a good guy. And then Sonny Dykes has been in it for a minute and had success and then not success. And So I don't know if that, you know, of the three candidates that you just spoke of, I would say Tony Elliott, maybe, even though I would prefer someone with head coaching experience. But being around that Clemson program and how they raised it to where it is today, I think I would have a little comfort feeling there. But I don't even know if those are the ones on the candidate. He could bring somebody. He could bring Heupel from, you know, UCF. I have no idea. I mean,
sure,
who's on the list, on his list. And all we can do is speculate and guess and kind of put the tea leaves together. That's why you're doing the plane tracking and everything else. You know, and I don't know how fast it is, but, you know, there's rumors out there that they could make a decision here in this week. It could be as fast as today. I'm like, whoa, woo, pump the brakes. That's pretty fast. I don't know if that means the search firm gave him a list or did he have his own list that says, I'm moving. Yeah, I know how to navigate this. I've done this numerous times. I already had my list. So my list doesn't change because of the school. Now, which one is maybe at the top of the list of his list may move around based off the fit for the university. But I wouldn't be surprised, though, if something's done this week. It's the way it seems like it's going.
I saw one national reporter call Danny White a wizard when it comes to hiding coaching search information, that he would put, that he would make you think one thing so you would chase some false lead the wrong way, and he's taking you in a complete opposite direction of the guy he's actually going to hire. So
because the Twitter mob hasn't gotten full force yet, because they haven't even begun to speculate, like, and start, hey, I got him and all this. No. He said we need to keep this quiet and be in a positive manner. Well, guess what? He was giving them a sign that y'all not going to find out nothing anyway until I let it get out there. Yeah, that's what he was saying. I like this guy. Yeah. I like him. I like all that noise and the leaks and all that other stuff. Nope.
He's not doing it.
We in this room. So if it gets out, I know it was one of y'all other two people, Boyd or Plowman. I know y'all not going to do that to me. I just got hired.
All right. We're going to keep our eye on this all day. Certainly, if something breaks, you know, you'll hear it here first. We need to get into some NFL talk. Our buddy Eric Eager is set to join us next for Pro Football Focus. We got the GOAT versus the young GOAT in the Super Bowl. We'll talk Titans and a whole bunch of stuff. Eric Eager hits us next on Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Certainly, we're keeping an eye on the skies today, not just weather-wise, but, you know, airplanes landing in Knoxville. And we're going to talk some NFL football as well, because that machine just keeps turning. Our buddy Eric Eager, who we love to have on Pro Football Focus, joins us now. Eric, you ever get out the old FlightAware software and, you know, start tracking college coaching hires all over the country?
We actually, I'm one of the voters for some of those coaching awards, and like, so one of, and I'm a almost completely a quant. I mean, I love football, but like, I don't like study, you know, the intricacies of all that. So mine is mostly algorithm based. You know, how much you're getting out of your team relative to how good your team is, and that's usually you know, a decent measure of how good a coach is.
Well, who do you think could algorithm the best to get this Tennessee program through its next couple of years of possible NCAA rough waters?
Yeah, we'll give you Danny White's number.
Well, I mean, I know that the Jamie Cadwell from Coastal has been a name that's come up, right? And then obviously Hugh Freeze is another one that is always sort of mentioned when these times come up. I mean, I think, you know, the hard part with Tennessee, right, is that, you know, the last time, you know, things, you know, you guys wanted to hire somebody, you know, the name Greg Schiano came up, and I think, you know, he had done a really good job of taking a bad program and making them good again. But of course, guys who are available, they are available for a reason, right? And obviously, those reasons I think were too much for him to overcome at the time. But, you know, so. You know, if you're going to go after somebody who's had, you know, a successful career, you know, sort of above Tennessee, for example, they're going to come with baggage, right? But if you take somebody, say, who's taken a Coastal Carolina team from, you know, where they've started to where they're going, I think that's a pretty good place to start the conversation.
Oh, with Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus, just there's some bonus college coverage there for you. Always good to have Eric on as he joins Blade and me.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Nationally, Eric, thanks for coming on, and we saw what's going on here. But I'd love to hear from the NFL in the playoffs now in the AFC and NFC championship games. You got the Super Bowl teams, the Chiefs and Tampa Bay, and, you know, old Tommy is right back at home there. But who do you give the game balls to for each of those teams? Because it's kind of conflicted a little bit when I think about on the efforts there with Tom Brady throwing three interceptions in the second half. It didn't hurt him, but he did throw them.
You know, the funny thing is the best player in that game yesterday was the defensive back. His name is Jaire Alexander. And unfortunately, he didn't play for the winning team, but he was targeted four times, no catches into his coverage, and two interceptions. I know one of the interceptions was a tip ball off of Evans' hands that was poorly thrown by Brady. But, you know, I know they were without Antonio Brown, but to have a game like that against that team, you know, as a secondary player, they're throwing out, you know, player after player after player against you. That's obviously, you know, incredible. The hard part if you're a Green Bay fan, though, is obviously Kevin King on the other side was burnt toast for most of the game. So, you know, that was tricky. You know, if you wanted to put it on an offensive player, I think Chris Godwin certainly did a good job of rebounding from some drops that he's had this playoff. He made some big plays at big times for them, not only at the catch point, but after the catch. You know, that, to me, there were some really good performances on the outside yesterday in that Tampa Bay-Green Bay game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, with Eric Eager with PFF, there's a lot of talk here after the loss there with the NFC with Aaron Rodgers and him. I'm sure he was devastated with the loss. I could, you know, relate to that. But, man, it seemed like there was a lot of finger point going on, like he may retire or he may leave to, you know, the floors and about the defense playing right before the half. Should he have gone for it on fourth and two? I mean, where is all this going to play out? And what are your thoughts on some of those actual plays, especially when they kicked the field goal there inside 2 minutes?
Well, I know, like, winning certainly covers so many things up, right? There's so many dysfunctional teams in the history of the NFL where it never, you know, bubbled up until the end that there were, you know, misgivings within the team. And, you know, and I think there's some of that in Green Bay, right, when they're going 13-3 and winning, you know, the division comfortably. And, you know, if you're Aaron Rodgers and you have question marks about the front office or about the head coach, obviously, you know, LaFleur going 13-3 in both of his first 2 years, you really don't have a case, right? But, you know, it's clear that he wasn't happy, obviously, with getting, you know, having his replacement drafted this year. It's clear he wasn't happy with them not drafting wide receivers for him. And obviously on the offensive line, they have depth issues that showed up yesterday. So, you know, and then it all comes out, right, in the day. You know, I mean, it's amazing to me that LaFleur kicked a field goal down eight, and the quarterback's explanation for why he didn't run the ball or call a different play on the third down was they thought he had two downs. Like, to me, like, that's a leak, right? That's a situation where, you know, you can defend the field goal, you can defend the not field goal, but you'd like to think that your quarterback and your coach were on the same page as to what the plan was.
Yeah, that's what makes it always tough. I guess lastly for me, Eric, I know, you know, home field throughout the season was difficult. Nobody really had an advantage. But, man, Tampa Bay getting to play the Super Bowl at home? Is that any form of an advantage? At least they can stay in their beds maybe two or three days before the game or something. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I think the betting markets are giving them some sort of credence. I mean, the Chiefs are only 3-point favorites. And, you know, and – you know, the last time they were in Tampa, they were 3.5-point favorites. So, you know, I think that there's going to be something to that. The interesting thing, and, you know, the funny thing, like, Blaine, was your Super Bowl, like, only 1 week between the championship game and the Super Bowl? Yeah, like, I feel like that it matters maybe a little bit. It probably would have mattered a little bit had the buy not happened, right? Like, and they tried to cram everything into 1 week. And, you know, I do think that if that were the case, I think home field advantage for a team hosting the Super Bowl would be bigger, but they have the 2 weeks, right? Andy Reid off of a bye is a magician. And you also have the fact that, you know, both teams sort of have to deal with the same thing media-wise this particular year. So I would say home field advantage would probably be like a half a point, if anything, given that we, you know that home field advantage this year wasn't much because of crowds, and the crowd at Tampa Bay is probably not going to be that big or be all that Tampa Bay-centric.
Wrong with Eric Eager of PFF.
Eric, it's really amazing because once you start winning in the league, then everybody, okay, you get everybody's best shot. There's a target on you every week. And for the Chiefs, it's like it didn't even matter, no matter what they've done or not done. I think I saw you tweeted about this some. Even on the times where they might have missed here or there on an evaluation of a play, none of that matters. They just keep on trucking, and there's no end in sight.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I'm actually a Chiefs fan, so, like, I follow the team fairly closely, and I, you know, when they traded for Frank Clark, I'm like, oh, man, they gave up too much, and they're paying him too much money. And then, you know, the Chris Jones thing, I was like, ah, I know Chris is an amazing player, but, you know, your depth is bad, right, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, all this, and they drafted a running back in the first round, which is sort of a no-no and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, though, the Chiefs know that they're just playing with house's money. I mean, you know, four years ago, they were the two seed in the AFC. They had a bye and a home game in the playoffs and lost. And Andy Reid, a coach who had won 66% of his games in Kansas City with Alex Smith at quarterback, 66% of his games for a franchise that had never in the history of its existence won consecutive division titles.
Yeah.
And ultimately he said, look, like, that's great, but sometimes good is the enemy of great. Right. And they decided to stick their neck out. They traded, one of the picks they traded was Tre'Davious White, who's a brilliant football player. And ultimately they made the right bet, and they made a big bet on Patrick Mahomes and all the stuff. And we're paid to do this, right? So all the things that the pundits, you say, like, oh, well, okay, if you grade the players out, there's X, Y, Z. Like, it's not interesting to say, well, Patrick Mahomes is just the best player on the planet, so nothing really matters. But that's actually the truth, I think.
We got Eric Eager on for Pro Football Focus. Art, we have to ask you some Titans questions. Obviously, their season ended early. As you start to look at this roster, there are some big decisions to make on guys like Jonnu Smith and Jayon Brown and Corey Davis. Those are some of the free agent names that come to mind. Who, if you're GMing the Titans right now, if you're John Robinson, what free agents do you start to look at the most to try to bring back?
Well, I do think that the linebacker position was a problem for the Titans last year, and if they can get him for a reasonable deal, I think Brown is a good place to, you know, go for them, just to, so they can be steadier defensively. Corey Davis is a guy, you know, in most seasons, I think he would probably break the bank, and he still might for sure. I think you look at the playoffs and the four teams left, you know, with the exception of Green Bay, they're all brilliant at wide receiver, and even Green Bay has one brilliant wide receiver. And so maybe the league's just going to pay wide receivers this year. But there's a lot of wide receivers that are in free agency. You know, Galladay, Jones, Allen Robinson, a number of great players in that position. So you wonder if Corey Davis's market is going to be suppressed a little bit. If that's the case, I think you bring him back because he's had a, you know, terrific run here in the last season for the Titans. And when he was out in the Ravens game, he certainly felt it. So to me, that's probably where I was focused.
Jonnu Smith, you let him get away. I think every tight end that the Titans have right now is some form or another of a free agent. Is Jonnu just going to make too much, you think?
I don't know. I don't know. Tight end market's weird, right? I mean, you guys had Jared Cook for a while too. And like, it's ultimately, I feel like, and Jared Cook was a Ram, I think, at first. But, like, tight end's so weird. With the exception of Kittle and Kelsey, young tight ends, if you invest in them, you're almost always investing time and energy in somebody else's mid-career tight end, right? You look around the league, and all the guys that play the position at a high level, except for the two I mentioned, had previously played for a team. Or, you know, the position's so difficult for young players to play, I think, that – you know, maybe Smith is just hitting his prime and you buy into him because, look, I mean, those guys are difference makers. And, you know, the one team that gave Kansas City fits defensively this year had Darren Waller, right? Another team, you know, another old, you know, an older-ish tight end who's played for multiple teams before he played for the Raiders. I think, you know, that's the evaluation you have to make. I think Smith is a good football player. I think he's banged up near the middle part and near the end of the season. But, you know, he's an explosive guy, and it depends upon what the Titans want to do from a scheme standpoint. But he's really effective on some of those sort of intermediate routes off of play action. So I think you got to think about that. It probably does come down to sort of dollars and cents with Corey Davis versus Smith and what the markets are like.
On with Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus, talking Titans and more.
Well, Eric, I'm going to ask you a compounded question here, and it's going to be probably long. And that is the top five pass rushers coming out of college, if you know them, as well as the top five cornerbacks. Because if they get that set, I think they should just draft all defensive linebackers, rush ends, and cornerbacks. I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about this in our, you know, what another time we hung out. It's like, I also think, I agree with you that they should draft, you know, some defensive linemen and corners, but they also should probably keep Clowney. I think Clowney's, you know, market is going to be suppressed enough given his lack of sacks and given his lack of, you know,
staying healthy. Whoa. You said re-sign Clowney.
Yeah.
For what? For $5?
If you can have Clowney for $7.5 million, would you do it?
Probably. That's why I was joking. $5, maybe $5 million. But I just don't know if that's going to happen. I get what you're talking about, but I'm more talking about culture and climate and fit. And I think he was a disgruntled, unhappy player. I really do.
Well, and do you think that was with the disgruntledness was with the Titans or just the general marketplace that he felt undervalued him?
No, I think it had to do with the Titans, and he felt like he probably wasn't in positions to maybe get more sack numbers.
Gotcha. Yeah, because what his cap number this year was 12.7, right?
Yeah.
And he made a bet on himself that obviously, you know, came up snake eyes a little bit, right? So if I think a team might get a value with him at the, you know, 7.5, let's say. But no, to you guys' point, like there's a ton of value. So, you know, the Titans aren't picking in the top of the draft, but at the top of the draft, there's guys like Quiddy Pay from Michigan, who are extremely athletic, kind of a freak. But then you also have sort of on that freak scale, too, is this Gregory Rousseau from Miami, who opted out this past season. He's really, like, extremely raw in the sense that he's played one good season at the University of Miami. And, you know, he can play inside. He's kind of like what people think Clowney is in the sense he can play inside, outside. He's super athletic, can get after the quarterback. That, you know, he's sort of, we've mocked him at like around 10, which you can go up and get, I think, if you needed to. Aziz Ojulari from Georgia, again, you know, extremely productive in the SEC. You know, so those are just some names. At cornerback, the cornerback market's weird, right? Because, you know, as you know, Blaine, like, you know, a lot of defensive back play is varying from year to year, right? You know, one year you're great.
Yeah.
The other year you play a ton of really good quarterback and you don't look as good. Sean Wade, for example, of Ohio State was one of those where, you know, coming into the season, he was a very, you know, solid prospect, sort of inside outside guy, could play both of those positions, and was exposed a little bit by some pretty good competition in the you know, a college football playoff. And the question, this is obviously like a really good question from the perspective of talent evaluation, but would you rather Ohio State have, if you're Sean Wade, would you have rather Ohio State lost to Clemson in the semifinal round and not play Alabama for you to get exposed? Or would you rather be a part of a winning team and then have to go out and get slaughtered by Alabama and lose some draft stock? It's a, you know, that's obviously one. Speaking of Alabama, obviously Patrick Surtain, the second, who played, you know, son of Patrick Surtain, a really good corner in the NFL. He's up there a little bit. But, you know, I think the cornerback market here, you have Kerryon Kendrick of Clemson. You also have Caleb Farley, who opted out from Virginia Tech, I believe, who is very good. Yeah, very good.
What about this kid? Let me ask you about this kid. Everybody's talking about under the radar, but he's going to go first round because he's 6'2 and runs sub 4'4, you know, 4'3 range. This kid from Central Arkansas, who is that?
What's the guy's name?
I don't know his name.
Okay, yeah,
they're saying he's going to bulletin board up the draft, and he's going to go first round.
Robert Rochelle?
Yes.
Yeah, I think. I mean, he's popped up in our numbers. I remember the name when I was, you know, when I was going through things. I mean, the size is obviously a big deal. I mean, the hard part about cornerback play, though, is again, like, what are the Titans' goals here? Because do they want and need him to play right away? We're talking about a Division I AA player here, 2020. Gave up a 98 pass rating to his coverage the year before, a little bit better, 54 pass rating into his coverage. So the issue is do the Titans need him to play right away? Because the issue is, you know, Jeffrey Okuda was taken third overall by the Lions. He was one of the worst players in football this year. Trayvon Diggs taken by Dallas in the second round. I mean, there were he got better as the season progressed, but he was a can't win with type player early in the season. And then guys like Jalen Johnson and AJ Terrell, had various, bouts of goodness and badness their first year. So I would say if you're Tennessee, you might want to maybe play a numbers game, draft cornerbacks, more in the back half of the first or second round, but also sign free agents if you want a quick boost to what was kind of a sketchy secondary last year.
Appreciate it. One with Eric Eager of PFF, Mickey.
Eric, we're right up against the break, but I did want to ask you one thing before we go. It's just been so interesting to see how quarterback sagas have played out in this division, the AFC South. Matt Stafford, I guess, is going to get traded from the Lions. I just keep trying to connect the dots in my head with him and the Colts. I don't want to because I feel like that would make the Colts even better, but, boy, that sure makes a lot of sense on paper.
Yeah, the Colts seem like that great destination, right, where you have a great coach and you have a good infrastructure and, great offensive line. It seems like the perfect place to go. You play indoors, like all the stuff a quarterback would want, Indianapolis has. They did lose their offensive coordinator. I don't know how much of a drop-off that's going to be. But, yeah, I mean, Stafford to Indiana. I mean, look, like Green Bay's now in Green Bay and Rodgers don't necessarily seem to be the perfect marriage anymore either. There's going to be – there's probably an 80% chance that a good quarterback is going to be playing in Indianapolis next year.
Yeah, never a dull moment, the AFC South. Eric, thanks so much. At PFF _Eric, if you want to follow all the latest from Eric Eager. We appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Enjoy the week off of football games.
No, never. We want football all the time, Eric. Good talking to you, man. When we come back, he mentioned the play, the pass interference call. That basically ended the game, the NFC Championship. I wanted to talk to you about that, Blaine, because it certainly seemed like they were letting them play, but that time they didn't let them play, and that was a really late flag. Let's talk about that a little bit next. Also, again, if you're tracking flights and you're a Vols fan, let us know the latest, 615-737-1045. Be our flight aware, flight attendant, flight correspondent. We'll be right back. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Appreciate Eric Eager dropping by. Always good to get the knowledge from him. And we were talking about just kind of how the championship games played out a little bit. Blaine, it was interesting. A lot of people talking about basically a game where DBs and receivers got to go back and forth. They got to get a little bit handsy. But we saw Tampa Bay have their final drive extended. Now, how they got to that point, Green Bay not going for it, and what happened on third down, we probably could do a whole hour of the show today on that and decisions that coaches make or don't make. But they called pass interference on a play. They've been letting them play. People seemed all over the map and their feelings about this. I saw one person who said, you don't call anything the whole game, really. You let them play, but that doesn't change the fact that this appeared to be pass interference because the guy had the receiver by the jersey and had, 2 feet of jersey stretched between them. I'm just curious because you had to go out and fight those battles on Sunday. If you're going to let them play the whole game, because we've talked about this before in the past on radio, do you change the way you officiate in the last 2 minutes? Do you change the way you officiate? Because a lot of times if there's a Hail Mary, like guys run into each other, but they never call pass interference, things like that.
But well, I think the way I've talked about it on air before is usually they call it tight during out the game, and then in the end they don't call it.
Right.
Right. So this was different. They let him play throughout the game, and he called it. And I thought it was the right call. I thought he got the call right. Ultimately, he got the call right. It was pass interference. The guy grabbed him. I mean, it was as clear as day.
Yeah.
So he got the call right. If he would have called it late and it was wrong, then I would have a huge issue. But it was the right call. I don't think just because you were letting them get handsy, nobody did something egregious. If it was away from the play. If I was a referee, if things are away from me and it didn't impact the actual play, I'm not calling it. But if it's directly at it and impact the game, I'm calling it. He grabbed him. And by the way, that's the same kid who got beat right before the half. Bad call by them playing one-on-one. I mean, man-to-man, that's fireable offense. But this is where a player must be smarter than the actual coach making the call. And you have to play within. You can't have any excuses, especially if you're a defensive back. This goes on all the time. Yep. They only have one play left. All somebody needs to do is tell him in his ear, don't get beat deep.
Yep.
That's it. So let him catch a 20-yard out in. Doesn't matter. We go in the locker room. That's unacceptable. Not only about a play call, we can blame it on a play call, but ultimately you're on the field. It's called situational football. That's a problem. And I mean, that was just horrible. I mean, I jumped up and was pissed. I MF the TV. As a DB, it's still going to be in my heart because I don't like playing with not smart guys.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely dumb. I'm sorry. I don't care what he called. You should have bailed out of there and ran just deep and shouldn't even look. He was looking at the quarterback the whole time. The quarterback's not throwing to you, bro.
Right.
Quarterback throwing to him. So you lost eye contact on the receiver. There was a lot of fundamental technique issues that he should not be having in the National Football League. That should have been a no play. I mean, really. It should have been that easy. Serious talk now. I mean, I could probably run any fast as either one of those guys. A guy receiving but I guess what? I would have bet out there and I'm smarter than him. That's for sure. That's just dumb football. So that irritated me. So then he got beat on a 7 route before, and then he mistimed his jump. He still was looking back too soon. Get to the receiver, then look, jump. All of those things. So that's what goes on, though, all the time. Better athletes, not smarter football players. So you're getting different versions of what the game should be, because that should be a no-brainer. Guess what? When that play happened, I yelled to my wife, like, that's going to be the game, the play that loses the game. And I said, nobody will talk about the play. They're going to talk about the last play or what, they didn't go for it on fourth down. Well, I said, if they lose by 7 or less, this is the play. This is because it shouldn't have happened. So that's kind of how I view it.
If you were in the huddle and that play come out to you, maybe not as a rookie, but as a veteran, what are you doing?
I might have called timeout. Yeah, I might have called timeout. Like, hey, we're gonna blitz right here. We're gonna go man to man against Tom Brady.
Yeah,
no, it's only 6 seconds left.
Right.
How about us play zone and just line up on the end on the goal line and dare him to throw it? In reality, I would have been like, hey, some coaches are like, this is who we are. This is what we do. So that's what he thought. So then you say, hey, man, play deep. Don't get beat deep. That's kind of what I would have said in the huddle. Play deep. Last play. So for him to even line up close like that is unacceptable. That shows he didn't understand the situation. He played it like it's the same down. It was 3rd and 10 and it's, 5 minutes left in the game. 5 minutes left in the half. Can't play every play like it's the same play. Yeah, so it's unfortunate because Aaron Rodgers then went home. But, hey, Tom Brady back in the Super Bowl. Again, I'm glad I brought that up. Now I get to talk about how I thought I wanted a divorce. I said it to Mark all the time, but I wanted Belichick and Brady to get a divorce. I'm going on my tangent here.
Okay.
And I believe that it was more Brady was the reason why they were winning and not Bill. Mm-hmm. I said it over and over and over again. And I said, I want him to get a divorce so we can find out who they are. And if you want to go back and look, I said I even would sign Brady, and everybody said his arm was dead, and I said, no, it's not. I watched him numerous times. Said, no, it's not. Now, does he, some throws go short? Yeah, maybe. But his arm wasn't dead. And he got more juice than Breeze. Got way more juice.
Yeah,
see? So I was like, no. So I'm glad to see him back there. He probably won't win it, but yeah, Tom Brady was the reason. People went there to play for Tom Brady, not for Bill. I watched this kid in college. He was under-recruited, wasn't highly rated, wasn't all that. He started, and then they benched him for some highly recruited guy. And guess what they would do his senior year? Then put him back out there to win the games.
Yeah.
And he didn't melt. He didn't flinch. Dude's an ultimate competitor, cool customer, under pressure, and great leadership skills on how to bring guys together. Know it firsthand because my nephew was a starting cornerback on the team with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this dude, I'll never bet. He said, hey, man, this guy, it was different. He knew he was going to start, and he believed, and he waited patiently for 2 years. They kept bringing in 5- and 4-star guys. He was some 2-star guy. He said, I'm the dude. Yeah. So, yeah. So that and he hasn't changed one bit. I can't believe he's doing this at 43, though. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's off the charts.
Yeah, 10th championship game now, 10th Super Bowl for Tom Brady. Unbelievable.
That's unreal. Unheard of. Anybody else done that?
No.
Dang.
Whew. No. And other sports guys have made 10 or more. Like Yogi Berra, I think, played 14 World Series for the Yankees. But nothing like this ever. In the NFL. Nothing ever. Nothing like it.
Before we go to break, I need people to think about this.
Not in the modern NFL anyway. Otto Graham played for a bunch of championships.
Yeah, he did. This was JT's tweet. Unfortunately, the only mistake Tom Brady made is that he got to play football 2 more weeks and he doesn't get to spend those 2 weeks with Giselle.
That's the most JT thing ever. 2 more hours of the show coming up. We're 20 minutes away from Ryan Callahan, GoVols 247, with all the latest on flight tracking, coach tracking, and the latest from Tennessee. It's Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.